sequel going?
Sequel sucks.
Bullshit generalization. Many sequels have surpassed their original.
Oh, yeah?
Name one.
I'll be back.
Why won't you die?
Prime, you can't die.
Then reboot, damn it.
Reboot complete.
Thank you very much.
Movies. Never say die.
Welcome to Movies Never Say Die, a podcast with a singular focus, movies that are reboots, reimaginings, or sequels to other films. I'm Justin St. Ange.
And I'm Matthew Grant. This is episode number 19. On this episode of Movies Never Say Die, we take a look at Mortal Kombat. But first, here's a look at official announcements, rumors, and hearsay for upcoming reboots in our opening segment, In the Pipeline.
We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon.
Pipeline.
Pipeline.
All right, welcome back. It's been a long time since we have done one of these. Sorry to our myriad of fans out there.
They're out there. Hello, Ireland.
They are, yeah. Ireland, India, I believe. But in this comeback episode, our own reboot, if you will, we're going to start the pipeline with, this is new news, I think, just only came out in the last couple of days. They will be making a Crow remake, and they've already cast, is it the same character? Is Eric Draven?
I guess they're saying it's the same character. I think in the sequels, they may have had different characters that just became the Crow. I never saw the sequels to the original film, so I don't know if they used Eric Draven or if they didn't, but
I think all the sequels were totally different characters, like literally no crossover with the cast or anything like that. But
gotcha.
Now we will be getting a Bill Skarsgård as the Crow. Pennywise.
So yes, I don't, this is a tough one because I feel like me personally, the Crow, so much of that movie is Brandon Lee and so much of that character is Brandon Lee. Like nothing ever attracted me to the sequels. Nothing ever made it seem like they could bring anything different than he and the director, Alex Proyas, and everybody else that was involved. Ernie Hudson, shout out to one of the OG Ghostbusters and the original Crow, of course. So I don't know. I think Skarsgård's a great actor. I think that there's obviously tons of source material. There wasn't just one, story that it was based on. There was a, long running graphic novel series. And so I don't know, maybe it's been long enough that we could use a reboot or remake, but I don't know. I feel like it was so definitive that it's very large shoes to fill. And I don't know that we need another one. What do you think about it in general?
I think I'm pretty much with you on that one. I mean, like you said, the original one is, so iconic and the cult classic, not just the cult classic, but actually I believe got pretty good reviews and consensus at the time that it opened. And of course, the whole thing with Brandon Lee, and it just seemed like it was, I mean, even at that point, I would have been fine with no more sequels or remakes because it kind of was a singular moment in, film history. It'll be 30 years since that, I'm sure, whenever this movie comes out.
But that stings.
Yeah.
Oh, that hurts. I feel old.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, very weird. I think I'm more on the I'd rather just not see this scene again. Like you said, we got at least, I think, three. I mean, we didn't watch them, but we got three sequels out of this and a TV show, I think. None of
was
which I watched.
Was there a TV show?
Yeah, I think there was a short-lived. It may not have been an American show. It may have been a Canadian show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Canadian show, The Crow, Stairway to Heaven. There you go. Lasted from September 98 to May 99. 22 episodes. I never even heard of that. I didn't even know there was a TV series. You scooped me on that. I had no idea.
Yeah, because I think only because I seem to remember the actor that was in it, Mark Dacascos, when I was looking at the list of sequels here, and it just mentioned that it was actually a TV show. Like I said, I didn't watch any of those. And I haven't even watched The Crow in ages. It definitely merits a rewatch at some point soon.
Yeah, I'd be on board with that for sure.
So, I think that's a movies never say die consensus. Maybe they shouldn't go.
We're out. Another fairly recent, you know, in terms of us having not been around for a while, it's been about a year or so since our last episode. A couple months ago, I think right around the end of January, beginning of February, it was announced that the third Fletch film, entitled Confess, Fletch, was currently shooting, with John Hamm taking the lead over from Chevy Chase, who played in the original two films. I've got to say, I never read the Fletch novels. I saw the first Fletch. I never saw Fletch Lives. And I think that John Hamm is incredibly underrated for his comedy. And so I don't know if this is one of those things that they're trying to do a more grounded, serious take on the character. I don't know much about the books. And if it was just a case of Chevy Chase taking it on and it just became a funny series of movies. But I think that John Hamm, I think this is a very good time for him to branch out into something comedic, because the few things that I've seen him in were, I mean, even in Mad Men, like, where he was, you know, he had some good moments of humor in Mad Men, even though it was typically a pretty serious show. But I don't know, did you know much about the original Chevy Chase movies or the books or anything like that?
I know what it is for sure. I know the series, and then it started as books or novels, and I believe I've seen the first one, but I honestly cannot recall anything much from it, other than it's, you know, a Chevy Chase vehicle, and at the time I believe it was quite popular, but I honestly don't think I've seen it. But I agree with you on the John Hamm stuff. Like, he's doesn't nearly do as much work as I would think for someone who's really quite good in almost everything he does. And whenever he hosts like SNL, like you said, he kills it with the comedy. And you don't even really see him do it. Maybe he's just living off his, you know, the money he made off of Mad Men, but
it's always possible. He just seems like he's having a good time whenever he does stuff like that. And you never really know he's in these things. He just kind of shows up and you're like, oh, John Hamm is in this. I didn't know. And he's also very funny and very versatile. And so,
totally.
I don't know. I didn't necessarily, you know, that's one of those properties where, you know, there's this, seems like there's a pretty decent amount of material to draw from when it comes to the novels. And it was so long ago. I mean, it was the early to mid 80s, I think, that the Fletch, at least the first one, came out. And all I really remember about that is like Chevy Chase wearing funny costumes and going undercover and everything. And it seems like that's one of those vehicles that are ripe for remakes or reboots. And then I saw John Hamm's name associated with it. And I was like, oh, this could really be different enough that it's worth, you know, I mean, because it's considered one of Chevy Chase's classics, I guess, even though neither one of us seem to remember much about it. But
it's weird, right?
But I don't know. I've been having, I think I don't know if I told you or not when I was texting with you, that I've been kind of dipping into old movie, like a combination of old movies I've never seen. Like, I just watched Taxi Driver recently. I'm in the middle of watching Apocalypse Now. Like, classic movies I'd never seen before, but then also a lot of movies that I haven't seen for a long time, like especially a lot of 80s comedies. And so I think I might try and revisit Fletch during this stretch of catching up, or, you know, reintroducing myself to some older things. But yeah, I'm interested. I'd love to see it. I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Yeah, you did mention that to me when we were prepping for this episode. And I think you and I have a very similar block of, you know, classics that maybe we somehow missed out on. I mean, not just because, you know, we're not movie fans, but I think I even mentioned to you there's a weird, like, section of movie fans, like you and me, that just, there's a black hole of, like, classics, you know, that we haven't seen, and that should be
some of it is just like some of it's our age. Like, we just happen to be a little too young for like a lot of the classics that came out in the 70s. And, you know, if we didn't have time to hunt them, I mean, there was so much going on in the 80s and 90s when it comes to movies. It's tough to be like, well, I'm going to spend Yeah, no, I've been watching Apocalypse Now for 2.5 weeks because it's like this 3-hour movie, and I'm just like, there's 3 versions of this? I have to watch 2 more versions of this thing?
Yeah, and then whenever, you know, and this will date us some more, whenever movies came out at Blockbuster, it's that we weren't going there for the old stuff. We wanted to see, you know, the stuff that we missed, you know, that wasn't, you know, Goonies or whatever. But definitely, I think, again, I am with you. I'm eager to see what they can come up with on a new Fletch movie, even if it just means that, you know, it turns me on to watching the original ones again. And it's so weird. Like, I don't even know if I've seen them. So that pretty much means that I haven't seen it.
Sometimes there's movies like that and you don't think you've seen them, and then you watch it and you're like, oh, I remember this. I just haven't seen it for 30 years.
I think there are some movies that are just so ingrained in pop culture that people like you and me that are kind of pop culture kind of people, even if we haven't seen it, it's just kind of like something that's been talked about and, you know, reported on, that you just kind of think it's so pervasive that you think I must have seen that.
That's actually a really good point. There's my kids are watching a lot of shows now, like Animaniacs. And there's a show on, I can't remember what network it's on, but The Amazing Adventures of Gumball, they watch a lot of. And those shows and some other things they watch, they do so many takeoffs of shows and movies that you and I grew up with. Like, you know, Angela, my wife, and I will just be sitting there just laughing like, oh, that's from so-and-so movie, that's from this. And like you said, it seeps into so much of the world around us. Like there's so many, like even unintentional takeoffs, like unintentional ripoffs. Like, I still remember when, God, what was it? I think, oh, when my oldest kid saw Empire Strikes Back for the first time and Darth Vader revealed himself to be Luke's father, my oldest son was like, they ripped that off from Toy Story. I'm like, no, Toy Story was doing an homage to this that came out, you know, 30, 40 years before that. So, yeah, wow. That's a really good point. I didn't think about that, how it's like you kind of go through your life and you're like, I must have seen Taxi Driver. But no, you've just seen 100 people do the are you talking to me line in the mirror. And then you actually watch it. You're like, oh, I haven't seen this movie at all.
Like going into some not official news, although I think Face Off 2 has a director and is being in pre-production and stuff. Nicolas Cage has come out recently and said that he would be up for reprising his role as Caster Troy in a Face Off sequel. You know, the Caster Troy that died in the first movie. But, you know,
when has
movie
that
magic.
Stopped Hollywood before?
That's right. I mean, the first movie was about swapping faces with people, so it's possible they just swapped his face with someone who's alive. I don't know.
I mean, you know me. If Nicolas Cage is in the movie, I'll at least give it. Have you seen, what's the new one? Pig? Is that the new one? I haven't seen Pig yet, but people are going nuts about Pig.
Pig, the one that's been out a little bit, and there's actually another new one that's coming out soon.
Is that where he plays himself? He has like 7 things in development. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I think the one where he plays himself with the Mandalorian actor. His name escapes me right now.
Pedro Mando. Pascal?
Yeah. It looks like he's playing a crazy version of himself, which in itself sounds like a crazy premise.
That may be a little too on the nose. A crazy version of Nicolas Cage. That might, the universe might collapse in on itself at that point. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the first movie was such stupid fun. Like, it was just, you know, you had John Woo with his brilliant directing and visuals, and Travolta and Cage trying to, like, outdo the scenery chewing. So, I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, if we get a Face-Off 2, it's got to be... I can't imagine there being a Face-Off type movie without Cage or Travolta or something. Like, I just... Ugh,
yeah, gotta, I mean,
put him in there somehow.
If Cage comes back, I hope they try and get Travolta, because...
Of course.
I think someone in the comments of the article I read for this said, Face Off 2, Face On. That's what the title should be. but
face yeah, I mean, offer.
There's no real news about this except for he said he would do it. So
that's fine. That's all the news I need. I'm excited. I just anything I read about Nicolas Cage, I'm excited about.
It's great news.
So this is really just kind of a interesting factoid, something that Justin actually read about recently. It was that Sonic the Hedgehog 2 has broken the box office record for video game adaptations with a $71 million debut, which, I mean, like video, you know, I thought it was kind of apt since we're talking about a video game adaptation today to mention this. I mean, video game adaptations used to be pretty regularly just derided when you've got stuff like, you know, Mario Brothers and do they have a Double Dragon? I don't know if they had Double Street Fighter. They had Raul Julia's final film. The poor man was dying while he was making Street Fighter. The story about the making of Street Fighter is more fascinating than the movie. But our family watched the first Sonic the Hedgehog, which I have to admit was way more fun and way better than it had any right to be. I thought that it was a lot of fun. It was a nice balance of kind of paying homage to the video games while being a fun movie. And so I think it's great that, you know, they dump a little bit of money into some of these movies and actually do have some decent writing and some good actors, and it pays off for them sometimes, which is pretty cool.
That's good. I have not seen the first one. The only thing I remember about is that when they had the first trailer and everyone kind of freaked out at how weird Sonic actually looked.
He definitely fixed him. It was definitely worth the money and the time. He looked much better than in the first trailer. I mean, the first trailer is terrifying.
Like, totally freaky and so bizarre because we know what Sonic looks like. Why did they mess with it in any way?
That's like the best point, is it? Like, I understand the idea of maybe putting your own spin, your own stamp on something, but when you've got something so recognizable and that's so successful that they didn't even really change him over the years as video game systems improved and as they made sequels to the games, nobody was like, let's change how Sonic looks. Like, why would you do that? It's just crazy. Ugh, it's terrifying. We may have talked about that trailer on this podcast at one point where we talked about how awful the teeth were.
I believe we definitely made a point to talk about how strange the Sonic and the Hedgehog teeth were in the first trailer.
But I just think it bodes well. I mean, I think it's you know, I mean, obviously we don't want to open the floodgates for horrible adaptations, but you know, if there's something that you can hang a decent story on and hire actual actors that do a good job and commit to the material, you know, it seems like most of the stuff being made these days, Hollywood is kind of playing it safe with established, you know, IP, and they're worried about anything original. You know, if you're going to be mining old video games for content, you may as well put some money into it and do a good job, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there. And the previous record for this for a video game adaptation was the first Sonic. So, you know,
it wasn't. Was it really?
Yeah. So the franchise just beat its own record. But
that's hilarious.
But at least we seem to be. Hopefully, that would be nice to get, like you said, video game adaptations that, you know, are worth going to making movies on, worth going to the theaters for. Because we've had some stinkers. I mean, finally, comic book movies have, you know, in the last decade turned that corner. So hopefully, I mean, there's a ton of video games. There's a ton of, you know, source material out there. So bring it on. All right. And in the only Oscars topic we will be touching on in this episode, something interesting out of the... What was it, 10? I think it was a packed field this year. I think they had the full 10 nominees. Four of them were actually remakes. Coda, West Side Story, obviously. Nightmare Alley, and Dune, again, obviously. I think we talked about this before we recorded. This was also news to you. What did you think about that?
I had no idea. I mean, I knew that, like you said, obviously West Side Story and Dune were both, West Side Story, a remake of the original film, Dune, I guess, readaptation of Frank Herbert's book, maybe. So I knew about those two, But I just didn't. I didn't do the math that there was a couple of them, because I know you and I had talked one year when A Star Is Born was big at the Oscars, and that was a remake.
Right.
But I had no idea that. I mean, I thought that Coda was an original film, as much as I've been reading about it. And then same thing with Nightmare Alley, which I really want to see. I didn't realize that both of those were adaptations of earlier works. And I mean, it's tough because I think you and I, having watched so many different remakes and sequels and reboots, you know, just on our own, independent of the podcast, and then to actually watch it for the podcast and look at it with more of a critical eye, it's kind of, and again, I mentioned earlier the idea of so many different Hollywood, just so much of their output is them just being safer. And so at the same time, like, you know, West Side Story is fairly safe. Dune is fairly safe. They're well-known properties. But something like Coda and Nightmare Alley, they have an established fan base and an established plot and all that sort of thing. But they're able to put some kind of fresh spin on it, and obviously to do well enough that they were award-worthy. And I guess they, I think Coda did fairly well, at least. Did it win Best Picture? Did it win Best Actor?
It did. I can't remember. It did. So, Picture and Actor and... at least those two. I think it got a couple others.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that, at least for me, from my perspective, I think that this is kind of the best argument for remakes or sequels or adaptations, is that you can find something that exists, whether it's a novel or an old movie or a movie that maybe U.S. audiences haven't seen, if, you know, something from overseas that they... quote-unquote Americanize or whatever, that if you, once again, if you find the talent that behind the camera, whether it's writing, directing, cinematography, etc., and then you don't just throw any actor in there, you actually find the best actor for that part, that, you know, the results could actually be worth saying, you know, yes, we should have rebooted this, yes, we should have remade this, yes, we should have adapted it. And so I think that's, I mean, and again, like this is the first, I didn't even realize it because I hadn't kept up with who all the nominees were. And actually, I'd known these films were nominated, but I had no idea that like Coda and Nightmare Alley were. So I don't know. I mean, what did you, I mean, you actually watched the Oscars. I don't know. Have you seen any of, I have not seen any of these.
No.
I saw part of West Side Story, and so I didn't see anything else yet. But what do you think of the idea that, I mean, close to half of the movies were based on something else.
I think, like you said, I mean, it speaks to, you know, it's not something that shouldn't, you know, a lot of film snobs, shall I say, or would sell you that they want totally, you know, original properties, original ideas and stuff like that. But it just shows that you can, if not just, you know, remake, you know, just outright, you know, remake a movie, you can take a movie and do your spin on that kind of story, or, you know, even exactly the same story, but change it up to fit another narrative that you're trying to tell, that you can still do good work and obviously get rewarded by being recognized by the Academy and, you know, plenty of other awards on the circuit. But, you know, it's not something that should be thrown out that you shouldn't do. And that's why we have a whole podcast about remakes and reboots. We were in on this before a lot of people.
The ground floor. We were on the ground floor.
That's right. We do not have a problem with this. But yeah, just I think you and I have the same philosophy in that sense. It would just be just make good movies regardless.
Good movies, and
unless,
you know,
it's The Crow.
I don't care how good The Crow is, you stop.
But I think we've seen, like you mentioned, A Star Is Born, and, you know, other, like, even sequels, you know, Godfather 2, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, have even won for Best Picture, and so it's not out of the ordinary, even though it's, you know, in the minority, but...
And I guess, you know, as we said, the more and more frequently Hollywood is turning to existing material to fill their slate of movies, I mean, the more often you're going to have even more talented people behind and in front of the camera, and you know, maybe one year it'll just all be remakes and reboots.
And that will be this podcast's finest year.
Oh, glorious. All right, last and certainly not least, in the pipeline, the only bit of news where we actually had footage, where we actually had a trailer, is the most recent trailer for Top Gun Maverick, the oft-delayed, since Justin and I were talking recently, very recently, that it actually was scheduled for release in 2019, but they initially postponed it to work out the complex flight sequences, according to their Wikipedia page, which is obviously the go-to for solid news. And then, of course, the film was delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic, scheduling conflicts. And I think we got like the first poster back in 2020, and the first teaser trailer was a little bit later, and it just kept getting postponed. And I'd actually, like, I thought that they'd kind of snuck it out and I just missed it. And then all of a sudden, the last few weeks, there's a new Top Gun Maverick trailer. And so, what did you think of what they gave us finally? What did you think of the most recent trailer for this?
I'm very excited that they finally gave us what I was hoping they would be giving us, which is a very definitive Iceman. Val Kilmer, you know, look, I mean, we didn't see him in person, but they show his picture up on the wall as Admiral Iceman.
Well deserved.
Yeah, Kazansky. So I'm very happy that that Val Kilmer will be certainly part of this. He deserves to be. And the rest of it, I think, I'm not sure how much new stuff there was in this final trailer other than that, but we get to see John Hamm, who we talked about already. He was in this movie.
It's a very Hammrific pipeline.
So yeah, I mean, it hits on all the stuff you want from a Top Gun, right? The planes and the beach sports and but I'll be happy to see this.
Were you a fan
month.
Of the first one? I mean, like, I saw the first one, but like, were you a fan of the first one?
Very much so, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, big fan of the first one. I remember watching. I feel like every episode we just date ourselves. Remember watching in my uncle's like big theater sound system on Laserdisc.
Also, Laserdisc,
like fantastic stuff. I mean, I had already seen it many times before it came out on Laserdisc, but I'm sure I have a VHS floating around somewhere and a cassette of the soundtrack.
Ah, that was a solid soundtrack. I watch it, I enjoy it. I wasn't like a massive fan of it, but I really enjoyed the movie. But that soundtrack was just, it was like the epitome of 80s soundtracks. It was fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, it's like I agree with you, as I often do. The trailer gave you exactly what you wanted, and you know, they had that nice nod to Val Kilmer, so it'd be nice to see that he shows up. And that's it. Like I don't know if that's a great thing that you basically just got exactly what you're like. There was no surprises in the trailer. I wasn't like shocked at anything you're gonna see, but at the same time, you know, it looks like we're going to get exactly what we want from a Top Gun movie, which is, you know, certainly what the fans deserve after such a long wait. So I definitely want to see it in the theaters. So it's sold me. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, The cast seems, you know, we got Tom Cruise, of course, and Miles Teller, Jennifer Connelly, John Hamm, as we mentioned, Ed Harris, Val Kilmer. I mean, it should be fun. Or, you know, Tom Cruise's career might just...
If you're going to go out on Top Gun 2.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like he's done Mission Impossible movies only for like a decade, so it's nice to see something else.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I like the Mission Impossible movies, but yeah, I kind of miss him doing anything else.
throughout history, different cultures all over the world reference a great tournament, something known as Mortal Kombat. I'm Sonya. That's Kano.
I'm Liu Kang.
Name's Jax.
Kung Lao.
Lord Raiden.
The fate of Earth is in our hands.
I am Sub-Zero.
Get over here!
Wins, you fucking beauty.
And that will bring us to our main event today.
It has begun.
The reason we have come out of our slumber of episodes, the long-awaited, especially for us, remake of Mortal Kombat. I think I would say that there was few movies. We usually do episodes about them. There are a few movies that Matt and I were more excited to come out than. And this, would you agree with me?
I'd absolutely agree with you. I think if I was not as lazy as I am, I might comb through all of our episodes and just run like a montage of all the times we mentioned any little bit of news. Like, we put it into so many pipelines. We mentioned it throughout other shows. Like, an actor that was even tangentially associated, we'd be like, you know, they should remake The Highlander, you know, who Christopher Lambert was in the original, who also happened to be in Mortal Kombat. And yes, that's a very long way of saying that we were pretty stupidly excited for this movie. Any little bit of news that came out, any bit of casting, any just hint of a trailer, anything, we were a little excited. We were definitely excited.
Just a little bit. I mean, the original, if I recall, for a long time was, I want to say, you know, consensus was that was the best video game franchise, you know, conversion to film, certainly at the time. So for fans like us, big shoes to fill, perhaps. Did you ever, I assume you played the video game, like, I think I want to say I was into the game solidly for the three versions, the first three versions. And then now, you know, what, 30 years later, I'm sure they're on. Well, I think they're not quite 30, but they're stories and characters that I have no idea about.
Oh, yeah. I had to, even for this film, I had to look up and be like, are these characters from recent games? Because I don't know who the hell that is. But yeah, I was in the same boat as you. I played pretty regularly the first few iterations of it, whether it was in the arcade or when I had it for whichever home console it was available for. But honestly, it just started getting too complicated for me when they started including posters that had all the combinations of control buttons you had to hit for the moves. I was just like, I'm out. It was just so difficult, but I always enjoy it. But, you know, and then, like, you got little kind of morsels over the years. Like, they would do, like, short films, and you'd watch it, and you think, oh, they should make a movie just like this short film. That's, like, this 4 minutes of genius. They should make an entire film out of this or whatever. But I never kept up with the games beyond those first, like, 3 to 5 years. I mean, I was kind of aware of them coming out and that they were just getting so over-the-top ridiculous. But, yeah, I think, as much as I loved that first Mortal Kombat movie in 95, the sequel, Annihilation, kind of did the same thing that Batman and Robin did for the Batman series, which is kind of, like, put it to bed. Like, it was just, like, I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't nearly as much fun, and killed it for me. So sad. But that first one,
still remember the the music coming up in the theater, and it's dark, and then the flames and the dragon showing up, and then the title, like, I think, what was it, like, folds over all the letters with the, like, the yep. sound of swords.
Absolutely. I lost my, like, and it was crazy because it was just dark, and then you heard the guy scream, and then the techno kicked in, and you're just like, I looked over my brother and like the thing just landed and it did the title like you said, and it was quiet for like 2 seconds. I looked at him and I'm like, this is gonna be amazing.
Best movie ever.
And that was it. I have to say, even with this new one, like even though the music wasn't exactly the same, they kind of kept the same style of music, the same kind of vibe with the music. And I know for the last titles, the end credits or whatever, they had, I think, one of the same guys come back and do like a remix of the old theme song, which is iconic.
Yes.
In my eyes. But the rest of the movie too, like I was rewatching it recently and I think they did a good job kind of getting that same feel while updating it to something, you know, God, 30 years later.
Yeah, I think, like you said, they had little pops and bits of that iconic beat, the Mortal Kombat beat throughout the movie and over the closing credits. But I think in our... How long is it? It's been like a year or so since the movie has come out. So we're right on top of this for this episode.
We're always, our fingers always on the pulse of pop culture and movies.
That's right. And we've both done rewatches recently. And if I recall, I think this may be one of the few movies that we may somehow disagree on a little bit.
I believe we do. We talked about that. Maybe that's just why subconsciously we waited a year to get to this one.
Yeah, we can't be all happy episodes that we agree with each other.
It's a good thing we're not in the same room. We might come to blows. We might have to do a little finish him.
The finishing moves. Yeah, I'm just gonna have to say I was a little let down. Of course, that's also due to the fact that I was very excited, which you know.
Nothing could live up to the expectations we had for this stupid movie. We only did it to ourselves.
And I didn't dislike it per se, but I certainly would say that I was very much let down overall.
Why were you let down by this movie? Why?
I don't know. I mean, some of the obvious things, and some critics have mentioned this, you know, we got a Mortal Kombat without an actual tournament in it and the stuff like that. I was a little annoyed that we didn't see Shang Tsung actually fight someone. I didn't love the new character of Cole Young. I think it was unnecessary to have a totally new character. They have 1,000 characters. They had to create a new one that was kind of, I don't know, and I didn't love his power, which at first just seemed to be like his power was he could take a beating. I don't know. There are kind of little things where it just kind of built up to me being a little bit disappointed. But the movie itself, overall, I mean, it looked great, certainly, and the action was good. But, you know, those little things, you know, dinged it for me, I guess.
I have to, you know, and I have to say, I remember when we first talked about it, when we first were texting back and forth and calling, whatever, when we first saw a movie, and you said, you kind of begrudgingly said, you're like, I have to say, I'm disappointed in this movie. You didn't say you didn't like it, but you're disappointed in it. And part of that might have been expectations. But I have to say, honestly, and this is because it's been such a long time since I'd seen it. When I did the rewatch, I wanted to take some notes. So I didn't remember. Like, some of the stuff that you did not like about it was actually some of the same stuff that I did not like about it. I agree with you that it was strange to not have this tournament when all they talked about was this tournament. But I also thought it was weird that he keeps talking about how they've defeated the Earth Realm and they've, you know, they've only got one more, you know, they've only got to endure one more loss. And the entire time, Shang Tsung's just trying to come up with ways to cheat. Like, all he's doing, he's like, all we have to do is kill all their, like, he obviously doesn't have much faith in his fighters. Because he's just constantly trying to go, it's like, well, how can we defeat them without actually holding this tournament? Like, that's the whole thing. Which, you know, to your point, that was kind of the whole idea of Mortal Kombat. Like, they held this tournament. I definitely agree with you. I also agree with you about Cole. I had notes that I didn't, like, I kind of liked some of his stuff, but I did not understand why they felt the need to, I mean, unless they specifically felt weird about tying in another character to the lineage of Scorpion. You know, which I actually like that part of it. I like the idea that it went back to this, this first battle in the beginning. I love the opening scene. The opening scene I thought was great, and I love how it finally tied together with Scorpion and Sub-Zero throughout the years and the lineage and all that. But I didn't, again, same as you. Why did we have to create a new character after having dozens of characters in Mortal Kombat? Like, that was a spot that could have been taken by somebody else. Like, I understand why they wouldn't have used Johnny Cage. I like that little sting at the end where they were like, I gotta go to Hollywood, and it's like, oh, Johnny Cage, yay, he's in the sequel. But there were so many other characters that they could have focused on that they didn't even remotely need to do somebody new. So I can certainly see the reason for your disappointment. I was disappointed in you initially that you did not seem as excited, because I was just all geeking out. I'm like, you know, the R rating was well utilized. It was super gory. They were swearing constantly. The movie looked really great. Like, I thought the effects looked good. I thought that the CGI looked good. Every now and then they looked kind of stupid. Like, anytime rocks would fall, it looked shitty. But like, I was so excited. Like, I finished it, and then like, I'm like, I watched it. What did you think? And you're like, meh. Just like, oh no.
Well, stuff like that, like you mentioned, the stuff like the story between, you know, Scorpion and Sub-Zero, very cool, because we, you know, in the first movie we were hoping to get more story between those two, because they were like, you know, the iconic, you know, foes in the video game, and we got like they were on the same team in the first movie, which was kind of bizarre. So that was cool. And yes, I agree, the opening with you know, Bihan and Hanzo has, I'm gonna butcher that, Hazashi, you know, Scorpion, pre-Scorpion and pre-Sub-Zero fight. Well, I guess he already had powers then. Yeah, I don't know. Was very, very well done. And so, you know, and the fights, you know, the fatalities and all that stuff, very, very gory and very cool. So they definitely did that stuff right. Because I think there were weird things in the first movie, like, I think there was a couple fights, or at least one fight, where they were beating on each other for a while, and then after someone wins, Shang Tsung says, flawless victory. I was like, but...
That's not a flawless victory. Just sticking the words in there from the game.
Yeah, but they got that right in this movie. So, it's not, like I said, not a bad movie, but missteps, I guess, for me.
How did you feel? So this bugged me also. I really liked the idea of Jax and Sonya kind of having the crazy, research about this Mortal Kombat, and they've got the house that's got all the articles, and they're kind of hunting down champions, whatever. But Sonya, of course, doesn't have the mark on her. Did you feel the entire movie like I did, that at some point she was going to kill Kano and get the mark on her? Like, like, was it that
there was almost no like, way like that was... wasn't going to happen.
Yeah,
that was telegraphed pretty obviously. And the whole Arcana thing is kind of weird too, because, you know, I don't know if they ever went that route in subsequent video games and stories running through it, but the whole, as far as I remember, the whole point was just, you know, Earth's greatest fighters and, you know, Outworld's greatest fighters. And at one point, Cole Young, Louis Tan's character does say, well, she's the reason we're all here. Who cares if she doesn't have, you know, the marking or whatever? It seemed very, very apt that, you know, it's supposed to be the best fighters. And then at the end, she does get the marking from Kano and then shows up and all of a sudden knows how to use her special power. Like,
I also didn't understand that either, where everybody else trained for like days and they, you know, they had to like find their power and figure it out. And she shows up and she's like, I could already shoot things from my hands.
I got this.
You're convincing me not to like this movie. You're convincing me to be disappointed.
I'm sorry. Well, let me give you something that I did very much like, was Kano. Like, he stole
I loved Kano.
Like, all his scenes, almost entirely.
Oh, I thought he was superb. I thought he was great.
just his voice and his inflection when he tears Reptile's heart out. He's like, Kano wins. Oh, you fucking beauty. It's just... it was like perfect.
Kano was great. I have a lot of random notes about how much I loved Kano. Kano was He had so many great lines in his. And it's funny because you like I try to think back to the video game and I'm like, he's not even remotely that nuanced. He's just kind of a guy with a beard and a laser eye. And in your head, you're like, oh, this is so like the video game. His character is so strong. And they're like, no, wait, I don't think that's true. It's just he's just such a powerful, fun character. And he's just swearing and fighting constantly and stabbing everybody in the back. And he's great. That was fun.
Yeah. I think one of the things that this film was missing from the first one was that kind of element of fun, I guess. Because the first one definitely didn't take itself so seriously. Or seriously at all. but Kano definitely, the Kano character. Who played Kano? There's so many people in this movie, it's tough to... Is that Josh Lawson? Is that the character's name? I think so. He definitely brought that to this film, which I definitely enjoyed. Like just little things like when they meet up with Liu Kang in the desert and he's just trying to explain it to him and he puts his hand on his shoulder and Kano is just like, what the fuck is this? Like just kind of offhand stuff like that.
He was definitely a strong character to go with. And especially it's kind of fun too that he's technically a bad guy, but he's just kind of going along with the good guys because he's from the Earth realm and because he's been captured by Sonya and all that. So I loved him. I thought Kano was great.
Another one of the things I mean, these movies, you can always bring characters back, I guess, if it's possible, but Shang Tsung just kind of steals Kung Lao's soul. And Kung Lao is such a cool character in the game, and his fatality when he just rips, winged fighter in half while riding her across the floor.
Oh, that was one of my favorite ones. That was fantastic. As soon as that blade hit the dirt, I was like, please split her in half. Please ride her like a surfboard and split her in half. And I was not disappointed.
You were not. They definitely did that. So I was as unhappy as Liu Kang when Kung Lao got his soul stolen. Taken by Shang Tsung.
Yeah, but it's like you said, if there's, just the way the video game series works and now the film series, and there's always a possibility that he's just captured the soul and it could be freed at some point or something. I don't know. But he was great. I actually liked his character a lot. I liked the interplay between him and Liu Kang and just, kind of seeing him as his cousin? Is that what it was? Or
Yeah.
So it's, just kind of seeing that familial connection. And yeah, and actually, it's funny because I actually wish Liu Kang was given more to do because I liked him a lot in the movie, and he just didn't have a ton to do. He just kind of came in and was like, "Oh, I'm a great fighter, and you guys suck, and I'm gonna try and help you train." And he was kind of as zen as you could be through the movie, but he didn't really. I wish he'd been given a little bit more to do too.
I agree with you there, especially since Liu Kang was the main protagonist of the first movie. It's kind of weird that they kind of put him second, third, who knows, fourth fiddle in this one. That something that I noticed on my rewatch was that when they after he meets them in the desert and brings the group to Lord Raiden, he says, "I've gathered Earthrealm's finest fighters." And I was like, "You didn't do anything. They showed up."
This is a lie. Yeah, no, I mean, that was a good thing about this, too, is that they actually had people that were physically fit, but also, it seemed like they did their own fight sequences and seemed like they did their own stunts, from what I could tell. And I enjoyed the fight sequences a lot in this. You talk about the first movie, they kind of did what they could with the technology they had, and, you watch it now. Like, I actually have not seen the first Mortal Kombat in some time. If I can, I try and watch the original of what we're watching the remake of at the same time, or like, but I just couldn't find it available anywhere. And something tells me those fights might not hold up from back in the mid 90s. And so I don't know, but I thought that the choreography and the general, cinematography, like everything looked really good. It all kind of had the right mood for Mortal Kombat. Everything to do with Sub-Zero, by the way, I thought was so much fun. Like everything they did with the ice, with the snow, all the fight sequences they had, you know, once him and Scorpion got together at the end. I thought it was a nice blend of stuff from the video game, like a lot of moves from the video game that was, you know, sort of fan servicey, but I love fan service stuff when it works, and I think it did. Yeah, no, I guess I could certainly see, I could see your argument for being disappointed. I cannot disagree with you, especially since, because I was real, I mean, when you mentioned to me at first that you were disappointed, and I was like, he's crazy, I can't wait to argue with him about this. And then the things you talk about, I look at my notes, and I've actually got a lot of similar stuff. And so it's, but yet I seem to look past that because I'm like, oh, they just cut Goro's hand off, and they just stuck a knife through his eye, and he's like, I just am so easily distracted from the problems and the problematic stuff that I'm just like, oh, good, his guts are pouring out over his legs. I don't care who the main character is anymore.
That was also one of my things too. Like, they, you know, the first fight you see Goro, and he, you know, he just gets torn to bits. He didn't even win a fight the whole movie.
Well, that's, I mean, that would be nice if they somehow managed to kind of segue that for a sequel, is that they make it, you know, I'm fine with the road picture, like them gathering the fighters and all that. But then, like, let's, you know, they did this kind of like weird training, cheating stuff in the first one. Like, let's make the second one the tournament. Like, let's actually have a real tournament and not just make it about how Shang Tsung can cheat and get around. You know, he still wants to control the Earth Realm or whatever, but doesn't want to actually trust his fighters to beat everybody. It's just like, let's see Mortal Kombat. Let's see the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed to look down very much upon Earthrealm's fighters and not think that they were much. So why would he be so scared to actually go through the tournament that they have won 9 times in a row already? You know,
unless he just did it all by cheating. Unless he never actually won fairly. But
I think he does kind of allude to that in one of the scenes too. But yeah, I think, when I was looking into this, the writers were hoping to do this as a, you know, a trilogy, which kind of does a before tournament, tournament after tournament kind of take to it, which, you know, I can understand trying to do something like that. I think they've already greenlit the sequel.
Yeah, I think I did see that somebody was working on writing it, but it's, you know, you get nervous when they have stuff like that, because if they plan for it and if they actually give the green light for all three movies, then you could say, okay, well, they're building up to this and the second one. This, but if for some reason the first one flops, then you don't actually get to follow through with their master plan. And it's, you know, you're just kind of stuck with like a third of a story.
Yeah. I was reading that Sub-Zero, Joe Taslim, the actor, said that he actually signed on for 4 sequels if it was a success. So
really, what did you think of who they chose to have in the movie, and did you wish you'd seen anybody else, or were you pretty happy with the slate of fighters that they had in this one?
I think overall the ones that they chose were pretty good. I wasn't missing anyone, because I kind of already, before the movie came out, we were thinking, whereas there's been no casting news or anything about Johnny Cage, so everyone was kind of like, is Johnny Cage going to be in this? But I do like how they, you know, like you mentioned before, alluded to, you know, in the sequel, they'll be, you know, searching out new fighters for Earthrealm, Johnny Cage included. Yeah, other than the addition of a new character in Cole Young, I think they just find they hit pretty much everything.
Yeah, I think based on the kind of stuff we saw from them, you know, they chose people that would look in, you know, that were obviously fan favorites, but then that would look interesting on screen, like, you know, Melina's face splitting in half, and, you know, Goro obviously being a pretty popular character. Although, you know, much like Darth Maul or other bad guys before him, he's just dispatched immediately. He didn't have like one, you know, he looks terrifying. He shows up and the way he's shot looks great. And he's, you know, shown coming through that door in shadow, and you're all excited. You're like, it's Goro. And then one fight and he's done, because Cole found his special power, which is apparently a nice jacket.
Yeah. I didn't really love the look of that either. Yeah. I don't know. His whole character. I didn't get it. But there are plenty. I think they basically got, other than Johnny Cage, all the original video game characters, if I'm not mistaken. And here, let me see here. Here's the list. Yeah, that's basically every single character except Johnny Cage. And they teased him, so essentially they talk about every character.
I don't know. I guess I'm just going to have to be okay with I guess, I don't know. I mean, like, it's tough because, like, I agree with the things you say. Like, I agree with the criticisms, but I think I'm just more easily swayed by how something looks and gore and, you know, I'm like, God, that character is not how he's supposed to. Oh, did Jax just squish that guy's head? And I just completely forget that I'm annoyed about Cole Young.
Yeah. I mean, I see where you're coming from, and I could easily have been in the same mindset as you, because it does. It looks great. All the action is great, you know. And even before that, when Sub-Zero takes Jax's arms, I mean, it's ridiculous, and then he just pushes him off, and he falls, you know, to the bottom and somehow survives. But no, I mean, it looks good. It looks great.
Your criticisms are valid. Many of them I agree with. I will just have to begrudgingly accept that we found the thing we disagree on. And not even, and honestly, and we, don't even really like, yeah. We don't even really, it's not even really, I was really hoping for more of a battle royale where it was just like, you tell me why you don't like this movie. And I certainly didn't expect you to just go through a whole bunch of stuff where it's like, yeah. I really expected to like butt heads more and just be like, here's why your opinion is stupid. And then that's just the final podcast. We didn't even make it to 20 episodes.
We don't even finish the podcast. But somehow we still post it.
You just... it's just a record scratch, and that's how we post it at the end.
I think because we've mentioned this to... Not that we're worried, but we've noticed that we seem to have similar opinions on almost everything.
I know.
Or at least similar enough that it's not like a disagreement. So, finally... I'm just disappointed that I didn't get to see this on the big screen, quite frankly.
Yeah, I feel the same way. That was I was still watching movies at home at that point, and so did it get it got like a limited theatrical release, right? I think or no?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I didn't start seeing movies again until I don't know, like February of this year or something. So. Would have been fun.
As you wish.
All right, that leads us to our final segment that we call the Reboot Wish List, where we talk about reboot, remake, sequel ideas that Justin and I would like to see out there. Obviously, if you're listening, you can follow us on Twitter or send us an email. Your ideas, if you'd like to include something that you'd like to see in the reboot wish list. However, right now I want to hear what Justin has for his reboot wish list item. Justin, what do you want to see enter the world as a reboot, remake, or sequel?
So many things, but for this episode...
One at a time.
Today, at this very moment, the one that I will pick is a little movie, and now I gotta bring it up because I totally forget the actual year that came out, but you will, I am sure, know what I'm talking about. My Science Project.
Fuck you, that was mine.
No.
Your soul is mine.
No, I'm saying, like, you and I just picked the same one this episode for the first time ever. This is hilarious. Seriously? Absolutely. Look, hold on, I even had it here.
Nice. I mean, it's on my I don't know if you can see it, it's on my list here. But the thing is, I was going to pick something else and I literally just changed it last second. That is amazing.
Oh my goodness. No, go for it. Go for it. This is great. This is a first here.
Absolutely.
This is movies never say die. This is absolute first.
History in progress in the making. For the podcast, that's awesome. Well, obviously, as you know, my science project. A 1995 science fiction comedy.
Oh, say that again. It's 85, not 95.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, actually, the one that I'm talking about. No, I'm just kidding.
You son of a bitch.
Yes, 1985, which was a banner year for science fiction movies, comedies, Back to the Future, Weird Science, another movie with science in the title, and Real Genius all came out in 1985.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's been so long since I've seen this movie that some of it, only things, little things I can remember, like dinosaurs and the fog and the school and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about it, you know, when I was making my list of possible wish list items, and I was thinking that they could really do something with this idea in a remake or reboot.
So, obviously, since I spoiled it, I have this. I felt terrible for interrupting you. It just burst out of me. You said it. And I'm like, there's no way he just said that. That was hilarious. I couldn't even pretend and be like, all right, I'm going to stay calm and let him finish talking about his. And then I'm going to calmly say, well, my reboot wish list item is also my science project. But it is. Right? It totally is. And I kind of had somewhat of the same reaction as you, because my science project was just such a weird movie. And I had the same thoughts as you did. Like, I remembered that somehow dinosaurs show up. I remember it being very smoky and foggy because, like, there's like a dimensional break in the school or whatever. Dennis Hopper plays the science teacher that helps these kids out or whatever. And it's just, you know, it's this weird movie about this, you know, guy who's really good at fixing cars but really crappy at the rest of school. And so he gets assigned the science project. And I actually had not seen the movie from the beginning up until, like, so I've tracked this movie down on Blu-ray, tracked Heavenly Kid and this movie down on Blu-ray, because I'm a weirdo and I apparently don't have better things to spend $8 on. And I had no idea that there was, like, a crashed UFO, and, like, there's, like, a whole opening scene I didn't even remember where, like, a UFO crashes, and this thing that they take out is, like, the engine for this UFO. And then 30 years later, this kid finds it, shines it up, and it just becomes this weird dimensional portal and blah, blah, blah. And so I agreed with you. Like, there was just, it was just, I remember just enough about it that it was a fascinating movie from my childhood. And effects have gotten better. And you can do something really cool with the shell of the story, but come up with different characters, come up with a different, you know, what time periods do they go to because they're traveling through time and stuff. Does it have to be dinosaurs? Could it be, I don't know, Vikings or what? Who the hell knows? And so that's, I the same thing, you know, same thing as you. It was the perfect little time capsule movie that came from, I feel like we could remake so many good things from the 80s at the same time. They're so great, but I'm like, we could do so much. We could do something with them. So I'm sorry for interrupting you. I was just so excited. You said it and I just got so, it was so funny.
No, that's amazing.
I felt terrible. I was like, your face. I was just like, that's my, you're like, no, wait, did I, what? And I'm such a baby. I couldn't even contain myself and be like, well, let's just finish the segment and then we'll laugh about it professionally.
I did. No, because have we ever done anything that way on this show or with you or me ever since we've met each other?
I don't believe so, no.
No, but that's amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better wish list segment.
We still got it, Justin. We're still synced up.
After saying we were going to disagree on the main topic of today's episode, and then...
Oh, we brought it right back around. I like that.
We couldn't
we're
let it end like
besties.
That.
We're still besties.
We still got it.
Oh, my God.
But, too yeah, funny, I remember but yes. When... This entire thing, like you said, there's a feel and a look of this movie that was so interesting. And, you know, I think the main character, to get that aircraft engine or alien technology, he like breaks into like some air, you know, government facility, and like I totally, like, it's just kind of in my mind, even though there's so many things about it I'm sure I do not remember. And I remember that it wasn't super well received, and I think those are some of the kind of movies that would do best as a remake, you know, like movies that are just kind of in your mind from a certain time period like this. I mean, this came out with Back to the Future, which, you know, neither of us would want another sequel or a reboot, certainly.
No.
But, and this one, it says here has 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's I love like, my science project. It was like, I have to say that there's certainly a lot of things about it that don't hold up. But like having watched it, like I watched it like 2 weeks ago. Like I bought it and watched it a couple weeks ago. And like it's just a fun, stupid 80s movie. Like the effects are kind of hinky and the acting is so-so in certain parts. But like, but I mean, Dennis Hopper is like on fire. Like he's just, he puts way too much into this movie considering what it was. He's just like, I'm all in. I am Dennis Hopper and I'm acting the hell out of this movie. He's a trip. He's really good.
I'm looking at it here. It came out the week after Weird Science. Yeah, it really? Stood no chance. And I think...
What does Weird Science have on Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, in my mind, it's got to be in the... It should be what it should be.
If I were Rotten Tomatoes...
59, which I think is very low.
I mean, that's... I just wanted to see if it was more than my science project, which makes sense.
Yeah, and Back to Future opened like a month before both of those, so... Well, that's it. So I think we can just stop the podcast forever. We convergence right there.
That's it. We brought it back around. It's good.
Never
I feel good about this.
Never doubt us. Yes.
I was worried about us going into this episode, but we pulled it out. We pulled it together. That is too funny.
And that'll do it for this episode of Movies Never Say Die. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. We'd also appreciate it if you take a moment to leave us a review on your preferred podcasting app. It helps us reach new listeners. And if you'd like to get in touch with us for any reason, we'd love some feedback, maybe a suggestion for a movie, reboot, sequel, or a franchise for us to look at in the future. Maybe even a possible wish list idea that Matt and I can both agree on at the same time. You can email us at moviesneversaydie@gmail.com. You can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at moviesneversaydie and hit us up on Twitter at moviesnvrsaydie. I am Justin St. Ange.
And I'm Matthew Grant. Thanks for downloading and sticking with us through the break. We'll see you soon.
I mean, if you see a cool looking guy, strike up a conversation and ask him on a mandate.
A what?
A mandate.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
No.
By that, I mean casual lunch or after-work drinks, okay? No dinner and no movies. You're not taking these boys to see The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
I'm Batman.
I freeze. I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman-ing.
I never had to say I'm Batman. I showed up. People knew I was Batman.
You like movies?
Hundreds of movies.
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 Movies. Movies. Movies.
Never say die!